Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. And here we are again. And it's spring, even though it tried to trick us for a little while. I have my co-host,
Carol Peterson,
here with me, and we are here with a very exciting show, an important show, important to you and your health, and important to our understanding of how to put the information that comes through the media into perspective. Because so much we hear creates such a fearful relationship to our lives, to ourselves, to our bodies when we get these sound bites. When we first had Dr. Christine Horner on, she put into perspective and helped us understand the news about Angela Jolie and her double mastectomy, prophylactic mastectomy, why in such a powerhouse of a woman with all the choices in the world, why this would happen and what we can do within our lives prior to a need to have this mastectomy to protect ourselves and the effectiveness of it. Dr. Christine Horner, she is the author of Waking the Warrior Goddess. This book was written, the original book was written in 2005, and it is brilliant. I love it. I love the way it was written. I love the way it touches the reader and empowers the reader. The information is so thorough and clear and just graces the reader with understanding. Well, Dr. Horner has added to that book 120 pages plus of research and more understandings. And now, with the recent news that Angela Jolie has had an oophorectomy or had her ovaries removed, and this new book, we asked Dr. Horner back. Dr. Horner, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. You don't know how you and your information so empowered women and men and struck such a chord of understanding with our audience. It's been quite dramatic watching this happen and watching the effect of the information that you share with us on the health of our listeners, but who also I've met as patients, and they have lists in front of them of what they're doing and how they heard it, and they heard it from you, how they're taking this information to empower themselves.
That's great. That does my heart good. That's what it's all about.
Now, we're in the middle of another news bite, and that is about Angela Jolie. Now, Angela Jolie had a double mastectomy and now an oophorectomy based on a gene test. What test was that?
So the test is called, it's looking for a genetic mutation that's present in a gene called a BRCA gene, so kind of BR for breast cancer, you know, gene. And there's actually a variety of different genes that they found that may have some abnormalities in them linked to breast cancer. But the one that is most linked and has the highest risk with it is the one that she had, which is called the BRCA1 gene. Now, everybody has a BRCA1 gene. It's a gene that actually governs tumor suppression. So what it does is it produces proteins that helps to suppress the growth of tumors. The other thing that it does is that it helps in the repair of our DNA. So our DNA is the blueprint, you know, for the structure and function of our body, and it gets damaged all the time from toxins and oxygen free radicals, and so we have repair systems in place. And it will recognize that damage and help to repair it. But if you have a mutation of this gene, certain mutations of this gene, including the type that Angelina Jolie had, what it does is that it's kind of a defective, you know, form of the gene. And so the proteins that it makes to help to do the tumor suppression are actually abnormal. They're too short. They don't work as well. And so just kind of across the board, and it's not just breast cancer, but also ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer, melanoma. I mean, there's many different kinds of cancers that are increased in it because, as I said, across the board, it kind of interferes with that ability to create that protein that helps to suppress the growth of tumors. The other thing that it does, as I mentioned, is that it is involved in the DNA repair mechanism. So again, if you have a mutation, your DNA does not repair itself as well. And when they look in the blood of women with the BRCA1 gene mutation, they find that they have an increased amount of DNA fragments in their blood, meaning broken sections of DNA that did not get repaired. So those are kind of the two, you know, things that are a problem. When DNA is damaged, you know, it passes on messages to our cells, and if it's damaged, the most common problem is that that damage gives you a abnormal information that gets passed on, and usually as far as any kind of health problem, it's most associated with an increased risk of cancer. So both of those things, occur with that particular gene.
There's some sort of reason that mutation has occurred. Is there anything positive having that mutation, or is it so slight that eventually it'll wear itself out of our population?
Well, sometimes we find that things like sickle cell anemia, had a benefit where it helped to decrease malaria. There's nothing that they've really seen with this. I mean, sometimes we'll have genetic mutations that are passed on, and there's really no genetic advantage for it. It's a very, very rare mutation. I mean, that's one thing to make everybody really aware of, is that it's extremely rare. In fact, less than 1% of the population is affected by it. We hear a lot of it because, a superstar like Angelina Jolie that brought that to the forefront, but the reality of it is it's extremely rare. Now, there's certain subpopulations where the incidence is a little higher, and so we find that in the Ashkenazi Jewish population has a higher incidence, and then also there's certain pockets in Europe, Northern Europe, that have that a little higher incidence as well. But overall, it's fairly rare.
Now, they discussed the incidence of cancer in this group, and they talk about an 80% incidence of cancer. But I'd love you to explain that to the audience, because it's not an 80% incidence of cancer from age 30. It's an 80% incidence of cancer by the time we reach 80 years old. That's a totally different statistic and understanding.
Right. Yes. So, as you said, we look at what's called a lifetime incidence. So that's one of the confusing statistics that everybody's kind of heard of, is that, one out of eight women or one out of nine women will develop breast cancer. But it doesn't mean that that's one out of nine at age 20 or 30, you know, is going to do that. It's like the incidence of breast cancer increases the older a woman is. Same thing is true for the BRCA1 gene mutation. And so by the time you're 80-something, that's when the rate is one out of eight. But when you're like 20, it's like one out of 2,000 or 200,000 or something like that. So the other interesting thing about the statistic is that let's say, okay, by the time a woman reaches 80, if she has a BRCA1 gene mutation, her incidence of breast cancer is 80%. However, when they do look at the go back in time in the family lineages of these women with the BRCA1 gene mutation, they find that the women 100 years ago in those families, the incidence of breast cancer was 1/3. Of what it is today. So it's like 26, 27%, something like that. So then the question is, well, you know, why in the world did it go up three times in
exactly.
the last 100 years?
Exactly.
Well, you know, there's many different things that we know are contributing to it. And actually, the you know, what my book is about, Waking the Warrior Goddess, is all about the things that research shows that has a statistically significant influence on developing breast cancer. So either the things you need to avoid or the things that you need to favor because they help to protect against it. And so everything that increases the risk in a normal woman is the exact same things that are going to increase it in a woman with the BRCA1 gene mutation. And there's so many different things that I found that has a fairly profound effect. And no surprise, our American diet and lifestyle is not a healthy one, you know. It's really a recipe for disease. And there's many, many simple things that you can do. The most encouraging information I found when I was going through the medical research is that almost everything that I found, if you do one healthy thing, you cut your risk in half. If you do more than one healthy thing, those things will multiply up together. They don't add up together. So it becomes incredibly simple to dramatically lower your risk. And even if you have the BRCA1 gene mutation, there has been really fascinating research that's been done on a variety of different natural products and looking to see how it affects that BRCA1 gene. So after we mapped out the human genome, we've had the ability to look at every kind of natural substance and say, okay, what genes is it turning on? Which genes is it turning off? How is it working genetically? And so we're doing that with natural substances as well and seeing that it's directly affecting that BRCA1 gene and correcting some of the problems associated with it and dramatically lowering the risk in the BRCA1 gene women in particular.
That's very exciting because it empowers us on all levels. So what I'd like to do today in this first half of the show, talk about what we can do to prevent, and the second half of the show, talk about what we should be eliminating or avoiding or reducing
sure.
in our life. And talk about what some of the statistics in terms of what the differences really are and what they're showing. So many of us go into our doctors and the first thing they say is that there's no proof. There's no proof. And yet some of the substances and the herbs that you're going to be talking about have over 6,000 studies behind them. So
7,000 now.
I'm having trouble keeping up, actually.
Yeah.
So how could it be that these substances are not known more readily and discussed more readily in traditional medical societies?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, first of all, doctors aren't taught that in their medical training. You know, it's very much, you know, something that's subsidized by the pharmaceutical company. So I can tell you from going through medical school, a general surgery residency and a plastic surgery residency, which gave me one of the longest surgical trainings, I didn't have a single class in nutrition. I learned nothing, you know, about natural approaches.
Nothing about healing after a surgery?
Oh, heck no. They give, you know, they bring green Jell-O and, you know, glazed donuts, you know. I mean, nothing, yeah. So it wasn't until after I left my education and was out in practice and watching, you know, the stimulus for me to, you know, be interested in preventative measures for breast cancer was, you know, as a plastic surgeon, I was doing a lot of breast reconstructive surgery and watching my patients get younger and younger. And finally, I was doing breast reconstruction on women in their 20s. And then my own mom got breast cancer and died from it. And that was like, okay, there's got to be something that women can do to help to lower their risk. And at the time, you know, we didn't know anything. This was back in the early 90s or so. And I thought, well, let me just take a look in the medical research and see if there's anything there. I didn't know what I was going to find because I thought pharmaceutical companies sponsored all the research. But I actually found thousands of studies that show exactly why we have a breast cancer epidemic, everything we're doing to contribute to it, and the things that we traditionally don't do in this culture that are highly protective. And they were all natural. So the food, supplements, herbs, lifestyle choices. In fact, the research shows that about 95% of the cases of breast cancer could be prevented just through these natural, you know, diet and lifestyle, you know, choices.
What an amazing statistic and so empowering.
So that, I mean, that's pretty spectacular, you know, when you look at that. So, you know, that became my passion, really, is teaching people about what they can do to help prevent disease, not only breast cancer, but all diseases, you know, and chronic diseases in general, because Western medicine really doesn't talk about that at all. And, you know, to me, it's best to avoid the knife if you can. And then your side benefit is having extraordinary health and feeling great, wonderful vitality, beautiful radiance, and wonderful things.
Our whole medical system is based on waiting until you're really ill, and then finally taking some action. And often it's pretty extreme. Like Angelina Jolie is really, I think, chosen an extreme pathway here for whatever reasons she came to that conclusion. So where should she have started? Maybe 20, 30 years earlier? Or what's the pathway for somebody who wants to not go down that?
Well, sure. You know, actually, when people say, when should you start thinking about doing things for breast cancer prevention, I say from birth. And that's because babies who are breastfed have a much lower incidence of breast cancer. The phenomenon we're seeing in the United States right now is that the age of puberty is getting earlier and earlier, and now the average age is 10 years old. Around the world, the average age is 16 to 17 years old. And so when we look statistically, what happens if you start your period at age 10 versus age 16, those 10-year-olds will have a 50% higher incidence of breast cancer for the rest of their lives. And that's because they have a lot more menstrual periods, you know, with each menstrual period, there's a surge of estradiol, which is the strongest, most abundant form of estrogen and the one that's most linked to breast cancer. So the more estrogen a woman is exposed to over the lifetime, the higher her risk. The other thing that happens is that when you go through puberty early, your breast cells are considered immature, and they're much more sensitive to environmental toxins, radiation, bad foods, and so there's a lot more damage that occurs. The unfortunate thing is, you know, if you've had a teenager, I mean, you know how they really listen to you, don't they? You know what their diets are like, and it's like it's actually this window that's considered, you know, one of the most important time periods in an individual's life as far as determining what their future health is going to be. And certainly, you know, it does as far as, you know, risks of breast cancer is concerned. So that's definitely, you know, something to be, you have to consciously say, okay, we want to try to prevent early puberty from occurring. Well, we think it has to do with growth hormones, toxins in our food, lack of exercise, too much sugar, all those kinds of things, you know, are contributing to it. And so it's really about educating parents, too, that the importance of having their children eating organic diets, so they're not getting the herbicides and the pesticides that have these estrogenic effects to them, using non-toxic products in the house, and, you know, making sure their kids are getting plenty of exercise. I mean, healthy diet and lifestyle needs to start from the get-go. And that has, like, an effect, as I said, for the rest of our life. And it's never too late to do reversals, though, is the other thing, is that the human body has an amazing ability to heal and to reverse some of the damage that you've done. And definitely you don't want to wait until you actually have a disease. I mean, the earlier you start, the easier it is for your body to do some of these reversals. And again, it's all through the specific diet and lifestyle factors that can make the big difference.
Now, are there risk factors? Are there risk factors in relationship to the fact that she had an oophorectomy, she had a bilateral mastectomy, in terms of her bones, in terms of her skin, in terms of her immune system?
Sure. So, you know, actually, taking the ovaries out of a woman under the age of 45 is known to have really bad and serious consequences. So, for instance, when you take the ovaries out in a woman who's premenopausal, she goes into this instant, really severe, harsh menopause symptoms, which is why they have to then take, you know, hormone replacement therapy. But it doesn't necessarily end up, you know, taking away all the side effects that occur from taking the ovaries out. So really, I mean, it's a castration. It's a, you know, it's amazing to me when I was in general surgery how there was this trend towards taking women's ovaries out. If you're in there for something else, that will prevent ovarian cancer. But, you know, what we found is that it actually leads to premature death, and the mortality rate for all-cause mortality is 170% higher in women who've had the oophorectomy before age 45. It also is associated with a 7 times higher risk of cardiovascular disease. There's problems with cognitive impairment or dementia, Parkinson's disease, osteoporosis, you know, leading to bone fractures, and also, of course, a decline in psychological well-being and sexual function. So it's not something you want to just, like, jump into because you've got, you know, all of these really serious side effects that can occur from it. Now, in Angelina Jolie's defense, she watched her mom die.
What a horrible
death. She also watched her aunt die. She also watched her grandmother die. And so what I found in patients that have had that kind of experience is that they have a huge amount of emotional trauma and fear, you know, for themselves. And you can talk to them until you're blue in the face saying, okay, here's all these different things that you can do that can, you know, really decrease your risk, and we can just do monitoring. So if anything, you know, shows up, we'll catch it at a super early phase where it's not life-threatening or anything. But every day they wake up and they think, is this the day it's going to get me? They can't help it, you know. And so for those women, it can become emotionally debilitating for them to live with that kind of fear. And, you know, so she had, I mean, it was not very impressive, where she had a rise in some inflammatory markers that theoretically could be, you know, kind of nonspecific, you know, associated with an increased risk of ovarian cancer. Her blood test, the CA-125, which isn't a very specific blood test either, was fine. All of her tests were fine. So she could have, you know, still waited, but she did say that she went through this, like, 5-day period from the time that she was told, uh-oh, you know, there might be something, and having to have all this testing, where she was flipping out, you know, and really worried because she's got the 6 kids and wants to be there and everything. So for her, it made more sense for her to do this and for her own, you know, kind of emotional well-being and everything. So, I mean, I can understand it, but for people who don't want to jump into doing this, there's many other things that you can do that are extremely beneficial and can cut your risk to minimal. And again, we've got some, you know, types of screening tools that can be done to pick up anything, you know, really early, so you would catch it before there's a real significant problem.
So what can we do that will, you know, you said a very important statistic in the beginning of the show. You said 95% of cancers can be environmental, or what they call epigenetic, or changes of the environment, which then activate our genetics. That means that 5% are genetic cancers. So what can we do to keep us in that range that doesn't turn on or allows us to resist these cancer cells?
Sure. So if we're just talking about the general population rather than specifically the BRCA1 gene, which I'll, you know, address that kind of separately, but again, it all comes to diet and lifestyle. So, you know, everything that we put into our mouths, you know, the type of lifestyle that we live as far as the stress, what time we go to bed, exercising, even the thoughts that we think, the emotions that we have produce molecules that will hook onto our DNA and activate certain genes and turn certain genes off. So all of those things have a profound effect on our DNA and on our overall, you know, physiology, therefore. And so most people have heard about what you need to do, and that, you know, eating a plant-based diet is considered the healthiest diet. Every plant's got tons of different vitamins, minerals, and nutrients in them, and also packed full of what we call plant chemicals or phytochemicals, and each one of those chemicals does not have any nutritional value or caloric value, but each acts like a natural medicine. So they have many, many ingenious ways that they are able to lower the risk of all sorts of different kinds of diseases, including cancers. So, you know, those are the main, you know, eating a plant-based diet, getting, you know, exercise every single day, even if it's brisk walking. I mean, there was a study that came out a couple months ago that showed that people who exercise for 5 minutes a day, I mean, this is something where you're like, oh, I don't have time to do it. 5 minutes a day, there was like a 47% reduction in cardiovascular disease. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous to me about how phenomenal our bodies are and this internal healing intelligence that we have, which is, you know, about the title of my book, Waking the Warrior Goddess. That's your internal healing intelligence. I mean, you give her anything. There's a phenomenal, phenomenal response. So, you know, those are the main kinds of things. Now, there's some specific things that are really interesting where, you know, again, they've kind of targeted it against the BRCA1 gene or, you know, other, you know, specific things that you can do. But, you know, first of all, kind of as a general thing, we form cancer cells all the time, and our immune system is what is able to recognize those cancer cells and eliminate them. So that's a part of our normal physiology. Now, the problem comes is if your immune system is weakened, and that's when those cancer cells can start to grow out of control. So anything that weakens the immune system, which is, you know, eating a horrible diet, having stress in your life, smoking cigarettes, drinking too much alcohol, staying up too late at night, eating sugar, I mean, that's something that really slugs the immune system. So anything that, you know, does that is going to increase your risk of developing not only breast cancer but many other, you know, types of cancer. So keeping the immune system strong, kind of a common denominator in there, is extremely important. And one little kind of trick, because not all of us can always, you know, have our lifestyle be perfect with this, but there's a mushroom formula that's called AHCC, and it stands for Active Hexose Correlated Compound. It comes out of Japan, and they've done hundreds of studies on it that shows that it supports every single cell type in the immune system, and it does it so effectively that it actually reduces the risk of many different kinds of cancers, and they found that it improves survival statistics so much in cancer patients that they actually prescribe it in the hospitals in Japan. So to me, it also kills bacteria, kills viruses, and so when I discovered it a few years ago and started taking it myself, I haven't had, knock on wood here, a single cold, which I used to always get when I was traveling, you know, a lot, like no matter what I did, it's like seemed like the airplane was deadly for me, but I haven't had a single problem, you know, with, you know, getting a cold or anything. So just a very, very powerful supporter of the immune system, and it's, you know, a real easy thing that you can do is to take AHCC and keep your immune system strong, even if you're going through normal life stuff, you know, where sometimes you don't get to bed on time, sometimes you've got a lot of stress going on. You can keep your immune system strong by, you know, taking medicinal mushrooms, and, you know, particularly that AHCC formula, you know, is a good thing.
We are speaking with Dr. Christine Horner, the author of Waking the Warrior Goddess, and looking at her third edition of this remarkable book on Dr. Horner's program to protect against and fight breast cancer. We will be right back after a short break. And we'll be right back. Welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Christine Horner, author of Waking the Warrior Goddess, and discussing her program to protect against and fight against breast cancer. Now,
go ahead.
I would very much like to hear about sleep. You mentioned sleep multiple times, and I think that sleep is tremendously underrated in terms of in terms of its value. And I mean, there's right down to people, I don't need to sleep. I'm stronger, tougher than sleep.
Right, and, right. And I need 3 hours of sleep a night.
Exactly, as a badge of honor. And so how does sleep fall into this group of preventative behaviors?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is I'm certified in an Ayurveda, which is the traditional system of medicine from India that Deepak Chopra talks about. And it's all about understanding the natural laws of life, you know, that govern us as human beings. And if you obey them, then your internal healing intelligence is going to be really smart and keep you well. And if you disobey them, then you create imbalances and they obstruct the flow of the intelligence throughout your body. And so one of the pillars in Ayurveda, there's three pillars, is sleep. And they said 5,000 years ago, they said you should go to bed by 10 o'clock, so before is okay, and get up by 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, what's interesting is that there's been a lot of research that's been done in the area of sleep and the effect that it has on our bodies. And so what this ancient wisdom said is exactly what the modern research is showing that is important for us. So looking at the absolute number of hours that we need to sleep, it looks like the optimal number of hours is a 7 to 8 hours. People who sleep less than 6 or less than 5 or more than 9 hours of sleep have a significant increased risk of various different health problems. Now, the other thing is that the what they found is that the sleep hormone that we have, which is called melatonin, will increase as it starts to get dark outside. So melatonin is very sensitive to light. And as it starts to get dark outside, our melatonin levels will go up. There's a spike that occurs in melatonin between midnight and 2 a.m., which you do not want to miss, because if you do, the consequences are rather spectacular.
Really?
So melatonin isn't just our sleep hormone. It's also a very powerful antioxidant. It also regulates the amount of estrogen we have in our body. So the higher it is, the lower estrogen levels will be, which helps to lower our risk. It also helps to support or stimulate the immune system. So it makes it, you know, more effective. And so all the different hormones actually interact with each other. Nothing's in isolation. And what they found is that if people stay up to midnight on a regular basis, they have almost twice the incidence of diabetes, high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and certain cancers, you know, like breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times people say, well, I just can't lose the weight. I don't know what's the matter with me. Well, what time do you go to bed? So your cells actually become more insulin resistant if you're staying up too late. So most people get hungry again around 10 o'clock or so, and if you snack around that time, your cells actually think it's time to sleep, and they've shut down, and so they become insulin resistant. And when you feed your cells, they just toss those calories off to your hips or thighs or wherever their favorite place is. And so it increases the fat deposits, and the insulin resistance is what we see with type 2 diabetes. So it's like cardiovascular disease and so forth. So it's pure medicine, actually, to sleep at the optimal times and for the optimal number of hours. And I have all sorts of tips in my book as far as things that can help you to get to sleep on time and deepen your sleep and so forth. But very, very important, yeah.
Now, I have a patient who came into my office who went to one of the major medical centers here in the city and who had breast cancer. And she's in her 40s, so that's relatively young. And she was told under no circumstances, while she was on chemo and taking radiation, to take any supplements or herbals at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's malpractice because there's thousands and thousands and thousands of studies that have been done on looking at natural products and its relationship to the outcomes with cancer treatments. And what they found, so these are, there's a number of, an increasing number of integrative oncologists in this country. So integrative oncology means that they're using a combination of Western as well as complementary and alternative medicine. And what they found is there's a 3 times better outcome when you do a combination of Western medicines with complementary and alternative medicine. So, for instance, they found that, you know, green tea and turmeric, which are very, very healthy things. The green tea is a drink, and the turmeric is an Indian spice that has over 7,000 studies that have been done on it. Both of them will enhance the effectiveness of chemotherapy while taking away some of the terrible side effects associated with it. Melatonin supplements, same thing, enhances the effectiveness of chemotherapy while taking away some of the terrible side effects, including organ damage, you know, that can occur with it. So there's when somebody's going through the treatment process, I actually provide consultations, telephone consultations for people all over the country to help them with an integrative approach. And we look at specific drugs that they're on and what are the things that we can do naturally that will help to improve the killing effects, not only of the chemotherapy, but also the radiation, while taking away the terrible side effects. And when I work with these patients, the vast majority of them, no nausea, no vomiting, no weight loss, blood counts stay normal, energy stays normal, and you just sail through their treatment. So there's no reason somebody needs to suffer and have needless toxicity that could easily be counteracted and does not interfere with the treatment, but actually enhances the effectiveness. So that's just ridiculous. And, you know, there's many, many things that are extremely important as you're going through, you know, treatment as well to, you know, to help with additional types of, you know, killing effects. And there's, you know, I say it's malpractice because the medical research is filled with these studies showing how it improves the outcomes.
So can we list a few of those? We've listed so far four things so far. We've spoken about sleep. We've spoken about melatonin. We've spoken about somewhat about turmeric and green tea. Where would we go next?
Flax seeds, you know, is actually considered a superfood from the World Health Organization, and you know, it's found to have 100 times more of a substance in it called lignans than any other known edible plant. And the lignans have about 12 different anti-cancer properties to them, and they're so powerful that when I started using them on my patients early on in my career, when I was learning about these complementary and alternative techniques, every single patient, the tumor shrank in like 3 weeks. I had women, their tumor shrank by 2/3.
That's astounding.
You know, incredible. Yeah, just incredible. Now, I will mention also for vitamin D, you know, which is something that's had an explosion of research in the last several years, and most everybody who's got a disease state will be low in vitamin D, and there's been a number of prospective studies done showing that if you take vitamin D supplementation, it cuts your risk of breast, prostate, and colon cancer in half. Omega-3 fatty acids. Super important. We really need to supplement with them because we get way too many omega-6s in our diet, and it's really the ratio that's the most important thing. So omega-3s come in flax seeds. They come in wild-caught salmon. They're in walnuts. But it's a really important thing to take as a supplement because they found that when we do omega-3 fatty acids, they get incorporated into our body. Obviously, we're supplying the construction materials for our body, and our cell membranes are made out of fat. And so when there's a higher ratio of omega-3 fatty acids, we have more fluidity or flexibility to the cell membranes, and they function a whole lot better. Plus, they have lots of anti-cancer properties. And then this other really interesting study tested the anti-inflammatory capacities of various different substances, and they found that omega-3 fatty acids had more anti-inflammatory power to it compared to any other substance that they had ever tested.
Wow.
And inflammation is something that we know plays a key role in every single chronic disease, and especially breast, prostate, and colon cancer, inflammation plays a huge role. Now, selenium is a really interesting thing. So selenium is a mineral that's normally found in our soil and then gets into the plants from being grown in that soil, although, you know, we've overdone everything in our soil, and with the chemical fertilizers and so forth, the selenium levels are now low. But they've always found like this direct relationship between the amount of selenium in the soil and the incidence of cancers in that location. And kind of across the board, we find that selenium seems to drop the incidence of many different kinds of cancers by almost 50%. Now, there was a study that was done on women with a BRCA1 gene mutation, and it was a double-blinded, placebo-controlled study, so this is our gold standard, done in Europe, where they took 200 women with a BRCA1 gene mutation, and they gave them selenium. And one of the reasons they chose selenium is that selenium is involved in the DNA repair mechanism. So they thought, okay, if we give these women selenium, maybe it will help their DNA repair mechanism to help improve it, since that's one of the things that is debilitated when they have a mutation of the BRCA1 gene. So they gave these women the selenium supplementation, and within 2 years, when they looked at their blood samples, they found that the women taking selenium, the DNA little breakages, you know, that they saw where they had more broken particles, it went down to normal. And the incidence of breast cancer was 200% lower in the women taking selenium versus the ones that were taking the placebo. And again, this was double-blinded, placebo-controlled.
And that was with the BRCA1, the very dangerous gene mutation?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. Yeah, absolutely.
That's now, pretty exciting.
That's very exciting. Now, ginkgo biloba, an herb.
It's an Ayurvedic herb, isn't it?
It is. It's also in China. So ginkgo biloba, which we kind of think about it for our brain health, you know, for helping with
circulation.
And so forth. But there was a study done that was in 2011 where these Chinese researchers discovered that ginkgo helped to prevent the ovarian cancer associated with the BRCA1 gene. So they looked at it kind of in the laboratory and found that it prevented that from happening. And then there was another study that was done that estimated that ginkgo might reduce the risk of ovarian cancer in the BRCA1 families by 60 to 67%. So
wow,
that's really substantial. And the selenium, we're saying, okay, you have a 200% lower incidence of breast cancer, but the fact that it's working on DNA repair and they look and see the fragments are normal in the blood, it's going to also reduce all the other types of cancers that we know that are associated with that BRCA1 gene, which, again, it can affect men. So men can actually have an increased risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer if they have that BRCA1 gene mutation. There's an increased risk of pancreatic cancer, colon, stomach, gallbladder, melanoma, so many other types of cancers, you know, that can occur, which is another, you know, good point about, okay, so if you choose to have your ovaries and your breasts removed, that doesn't eliminate, you know, the problem, because there's these other cancers that you can have, and, you know, even if you have the surgery done, it's not 100%, you know, guarantee that you're not going to have a problem. It diminishes it substantially, but it's not, you know, 100%, like I said. So it's important for everybody, no matter what you choose to do, even if you choose surgery, that, you know, you're really looking at these things that have been researched and proven to substantially lower your risk of, you know, developing cancers and helping to protect your health.
Could you help us understand the foods we can eat that would support this whole system?
Sure. So again, plants, most important things. So we're talking about organic fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, omega-3 fatty acids. That's a, you know, very best diet that you can consume. Now, there's certain plants, you know, that we know that have special anti-cancer properties to them, and one of the standouts in the vegetable is cruciferous vegetables. So this is broccoli, cauliflower, kale, Brussels sprouts, bok choy. There's about 12 to 18 different vegetables as part of the cruciferous family, and they each of them have specific chemicals in them that are known to have some fairly profound anti-cancer effects to them. They also affect the BRCA1 gene. So I know there's a lot of controversy around soy, but what's interesting is that if tofu or soy, a whole soy organic, is given to prepubescent girls, they found it delays the onset of puberty, and when they go through puberty, it will help to mature the breast cells.
Very interesting.
So it makes them more resistant to environmental, damage and so forth. And so women or girls who eat the tofu prepubescent and right around puberty time, early teen years, they actually have a 50% lower incidence of breast cancer. Now, soy that's consumed later on in life, and again, has to be organic. They spray the heck out of the crops here in the U.S. and do genetically modified, so it's got to be organic. But they found that it doesn't have much of an influence at all. I mean, the protective effects are really way profound in that kind of preteen, teen time. But there was a Chinese study that was done in 2014 that found that people who regularly consumed soy and had that BRCA1 gene, problem that they dropped their risk of ovarian cancer by 70%. And it seemed
Wow.
like the effect was really a dose-response relationship, meaning that the more soy a woman consumed, the lower her risk of ovarian cancer was.
Was this tofu or some of the other forms or whole beans?
Well, we have to emphasize that it's whole soy food, so that would mean miso soup, and there's a number of studies that showed that direct linear relationship with miso soup and breast cancer, so one cup a day would decrease it by 10%, two drinks by, 30%, four cups by 45%, so there's a dose-response linear relationship, we'd say. So it has to be whole soy food, so edamame, miso soup, natto, tempeh, tofu, any of those. Avoid any kind of soy supplementation. That's where the research shows that it may have an opposite effect. When you take out certain substances, like genistein was one of the things that was identified, and they created supplements out of it and concentrated it into a form. It gave it in a form that you'd never get in nature, and they actually found it had a stimulatory effect. So that's why there's a lot of controversy. Oh, my God, soy can cause, breast cancer. But the whole thing is that you have to eat whole soy foods. I mean, no supplementation, and make sure it's organic. Yeah.
And how about soy protein or soy milk?
It's okay. It's not considered a very high quality, type of soy to consume. It's much better to get the fresh, whole foods. If you were making your own soy milk, where it's fresh out of the beans, that's a different thing than all the preservative, kinds of things. So, high quality foods are, the most important things. Yeah.
Do you think sprouts have a place to play?
Absolutely. In fact, broccoli sprouts have 100 times more of a particular chemical called sulforaphane that's found in cruciferous vegetables. So sulforaphane is something that helps our body to detoxify itself, and it's in much higher levels than sprouts. So sprouts are, really superfoods because we do see these concentrated amounts of very health-protecting chemicals that'll be present in them versus what they are in the adult plant.
We're coming to the end. We have about a few minutes more, which is quite disappointing.
Surprise, huh?
Yeah. Yes, because I would love to hear what to avoid, but I didn't want to interrupt. There's so much we can do so positively, and there was no way I wanted to shift the subject.
Yeah.
But what I would to do is
talk about it real fast.
Well, actually, I'd like you can do it in any way you want. I'd love to. You've sum up the hour. And what would you like as a takeaway for this show for the audience?
Sure. So all the things you've heard that are bad for you, eating fast foods, burgers, fries, all that crap, colas, the sugar, candy, you stay away from that stuff. Eat primarily a plant-based diet. But, the really most important concept to get across is how incredibly simple it is to dramatically lower your risk. Everything that I found when I was looking, as I said previously, was that you cut the risk in half. You do one thing. You cut your risk in half. You exercise daily. You cut your risk in half. If you, go to bed by 10 o'clock, you cut your risk in half. If you, add certain supplements like AHCC, that mushroom formula to help your immune system, or the turmeric, or the green tea, cut your risk in half. If you combine them, their effects multiply. So it's incredibly simple. to dramatically lower your risk. And just, you know, you can use my book as a guide for what you need to avoid, what you need to favor. Make sure you're doing as many of the things that you can, you know, to favor and minimize the things that we know that are damaging for us. And then your likelihood of having any kind of chronic disease is going to be incredibly low.
Do these things synergize each other?
They do. So every time they do a test to see, okay, we're going to take two healthy things and bring them together and see what happens. So, for instance, there was a study that used green tea and turmeric. So in combination, they found that green tea enhanced the anti-cancer effects of turmeric by 3 times and turmeric enhanced the anti-cancer effects of green tea by 8 times.
Wow.
They found the same thing with milk, turmeric and soy. You know, they have a synergistic effect. And again, almost invariably, every time that they did studies where they were looking what happens when you combine two healthy things, they had synergistic effects. Now, on the downside, if you do two unhealthy things, those will have synergistic effects too. So,
good point.
Yeah.
So we are speaking with Dr. Christine Horner, and she's telling us and sharing with us how to waking our immune system to support our health and recognize threats and to act appropriately in this toxic soup we live in. How to Avoid the Pitfalls. It's an exciting book, empowering book, a wonderful book to have and to use as a reference. Dr. Christine Horner, thank you so much for being with us.
Can we give out my website for
Would you please?
So on my website, I've got a free newsletter you can sign up for and all sorts of tips on there. You can order my book and so forth. But drchristinehorner.com, drchristinehorner.com.
Thank you again, and we would love you back. So we would like to discuss some of the pitfalls and how to avoid them, because they're very important also in terms understanding a path to a higher level of health. Carol?
Okay, you can also check out our blog. It's takechargeofhealth.blogspot.com.
And thank you very much. It's been a wonderful hour. And we will be back next week with an absolutely wonderful show. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me, Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.